Hey, nice pumpkin shirt.
Thank you. It's a fancy pumpkin. Do you get it?
Oh, yeah, I get it.
On his little hanky right here is the first line of the pumpkin's fancy, like his monogram.
He should be doing the electric slide or something, or he should be on a slide.
He could be sliding. You could say he's sliding.
Yeah.
He's got a pipe major's mace. It's the details,
A
the
pipe
little
major's
things.
mace? You mean a drum major's mace?
I mean, yeah, drum. What? You mean you've never had a pipe major's mace before?
Well,
I play bagpipes. I know what I'm talking about. So, Andrew, I spent the first nearly 20 years of my piping on all synthetic drone reeds. Plastic body with plastic tongue under a rubber bridle, just all synthetic. And I did try during that time just switching in one cane bass drone reed just to try it out. It proved to be too much for me personally. I couldn't keep up with it. More recently, though, I've switched to I'm using these redwood drone reeds right now where it's a wood body, but it still has a plastic or carbon fiber tongue on it. So it's like this mix of like synthetic materials and natural materials. And I just feel like I'm not very well experienced with what the differences are with different kinds of drone reeds. And so I'm curious, a player like yourself who's tried more stuff than I have, what are the differences? What are the benefits or detriments to going all composite or all natural or all synthetic? And it's not just the body materials, it's also the tongue materials. The drone reed tongues are made out of different things. Does my whole band all need to match when it comes to drone reeds? What do you think?
Okay, I mean, these are a lot of questions. And the answer to this for me is I don't really know for sure. Although I will say this, I don't really know what the differences are between these materials. It would be interesting to talk with an expert on this. But I will say I've trialed and errored a lot of different drone reeds. And yeah, they each have a different quality of sound, don't they? So I think that's one thing we could get out of the way, which is to say that these materials offer different qualities of sound to come out of the instrument. And really, we don't have a way of measuring quality of sound. There's no magic quality of soundometer. So really, it all has to do with what your preferences are and what you like. And then why do you like it? Man, who knows? Who knows? It reminds me of a distorted electric guitar. If you ever hear an electric guitar played with absolutely no effects and no distortion, you'd be like, ew, what's that? We actually want some of the imperfection in there. That's a big part of what makes us enjoy the sound. So when you actually enjoy some drone reeds more than others, is that because of the perfection of the sound or is it because of some of the imperfections? I wonder. I don't know
Oh,
the answer.
interesting.
I don't know the answer to that question, but it just makes me wonder. And then obviously, actually, it might not be that obvious, but the fact that there's different qualities of sound at all, even though they're all playing at the same pitch, right? So
Yeah.
I can tune my Easy Drones to 480. And I can tune my Celbys to 480, but it's producing a very different quality of sound. So what's that all about? The quality of sound doesn't have to do with pitch. It actually has to do with the timbre that your drones produce with those reeds. And then the timbre is, of course, the distribution and amplitude of the harmonics of the sound, right? Or I would say actually perhaps more the distribution of the amplitudes of the harmonics of the sound, right? Is what is going to results in certain different types of sounds depending on the materials that you use. So, yeah, different reeds offer different things.
Yeah, there are so many variables there because it's not just the different reeds offering different things. It's how does that reed sound in different drones as well,
That's
huh?
right. Because drones will be different as well. Different dimensions, different wood. And then, of course, the environment that you're playing in will probably play a role.
So
Yep.
then, if I'm looking at my band, I think it's a lot of fun. Like the solo thing is where it's a lot of fun to try different reeds and see what you like. Interestingly, too, I think it's different. It'll sound different when you're playing compared to if you hear like a recording of yourself from a distance, you know? The way it sounds to us when it's right around our head is probably different than how it sounds to other people. But with my
Yes.
band, should we all have the same kind of drone reeds?
It's a
Or would
great
there be an
question.
advantage to having a mix? Does it build to something special when there's a mix of sounds?
Yeah. And then perhaps another way of phrasing that question would be, are you at a disadvantage if you mix? Would be another question. And so the answer to that question is, I don't really know the answer. I've played in great sounding bands with a mix of reeds, and I've played in great sounding bands with matching reeds. I've played in great sounding bands with synthetic and great sounding bands with Kane. And so the answer to that question is probably specific to the band. One thing that comes to mind as we talk about this, I'm not quite sure what all these materials are up to, but there's some key characteristics of a drone read that I'm concerned with, right? One would be what we've already talked about a little bit, which is what quality of sound is it producing, right? But that's just one characteristic of a drone read that I'm concerned with. Can you think of any of the other ones? And don't say color.
Volume, maybe? How loud it is for balance between tenors and bass?
Yeah, sure. I suppose volume, yep. Can you think of any others?
Yeah. Well, hey, now I'm not trying to dodge the question here, but it does occur to me. I want a quick clarification. When you say quality of sound, when we're talking about the drone reads, are we talking high quality versus low quality, or are we talking specific characteristics of that sound?
Like, I think what I'm thinking about with quality is just how much do I like the sound of it?
Gotcha.
That's it. Okay. Subjective. It's a subjective measurement.
Okay. So other than that, I think maybe a thing to be concerned about with would be like a kind of, how would you measure steadiness? Something like, is it consistent, right?
Cool. I like that. So that's another one. So how much does the reed change in pitch with a change in blowing pressure? Because I don't know about you, Jim, but I still do not blow perfectly steadily. I'm always improving. I think relative to the average Joe, I blow pretty steadily. But I personally know that there's a lot of imperfection in my blowing. And I want to make sure that...
You'll get there, Andrew. Keep trying.
Yeah,
you'll get
there. Thanks. I'm working on it. I got the manometer back there and it should be fine. And I've got a Karate Kid headband.
Well, that's all you need.
That seems to really help. But anyway, where was I going with this? Yes. So as my blowing changes in pressure, I don't want the pitch of my drone read to change. And what you'll find is some drone reads, for whatever reason... I'll leave it to experts to explain the reason, but some drone reads will change quite considerably in pitch with a mistake in blowing, and some of them will stay pretty darn solid regardless. I find easy drone tenors are very forgiving with blowing pressure changes, but that the bass drone read is not for some
reason.
Interesting. And that's just me. That's just my pipes. And so maybe it would be different. And I'm not trying to diss the easy drone bass drone read. I'm just saying what I find. So but meanwhile, I have a Kinnaird bass read that is very forgiving. And so that's actually my default. I've got, you know, easy drone tenors and a Kinnaird bass as backups. And I always have them nearby and just in case, you know, I can put them in. And they're actually very forgiving steadiness wise. So I would call that very stable. Right. And then there's another key one, which I think people really miss. They really miss the mark on this one, which is, I don't know how I would describe it, but it would be like predictability when condensation forms on the reed. That's a key one. So as the reed takes on moisture, do we lose predictability? And that is the downfall of synthetic drone reeds, in my opinion, is that when they get wet, right, when moisture sets in and condensation starts to form, I think probably partially because the tongue is a flat surface, I'm not quite entirely sure why, but then you get beads of moisture that form on the tongue, and then they start to rattle around, and then your drones just start to become unpredictable, and you can't really control them anymore. One of the beauties of Kane drone reeds that you don't really understand until you play them for a while is like, wait, my bagpipe is getting quite wet, but my drones are staying in tune. It's the weirdest thing. And we can talk about maybe why that is, but Kane drone reeds are far more predictable for far longer in conditions of high moisture, let's say. That's my experience. But that's one of the really underrated qualities of playing Kane. And then the Kane drone reeds, if you can tame them, in most bagpipers' opinion, produces a far superior sound to any of the synthetic options. In most people's opinion, not everybody. Some people will be like, there's no real difference. And it's like, well, I disagree with them. It's subjective. So that's what they say. I think they're probably like not being totally honest with themselves, perhaps. But yeah, so Kane drone reads sound amazing, and they're actually more stable and predictable in the general sense. And then certainly as moisture sets in, Kane is more stable and reliable than synthetic.
That is interesting. Like playing winter funerals and stuff like that, I had, when I was on an all synthetic set of drone reads, that's when I had my drones sometimes just totally turn off before I could get through the gig. I'm right now on a half synthetic, half wood situation, which I think is doing better. I haven't had that problem yet.
Yeah.
So maybe it's like soaking in the moisture a bit, but I think I would have expected Kane drone reeds because of something about the aura around them. I feel intimidated by them. I would just expect them to be more difficult in every way. But the way you're describing makes a lot of sense why they would be more reliable, last longer, et cetera, in that kind of situation.
Exactly. And by the way, the basic principles that you would use to get Kane drone reads to work are actually pretty darn similar to the principles that we use to get synthetic drone reads to work. Mm-hmm. But one of the things about synthetic drone reads is they can be basically set at the factory. You could ship the synthetic reads to someone who doesn't really know much at all about drone reads, and they could just plug them in and they'll be pretty close. I think that's a really high value aspect of a synthetic read, is for people who don't know anything or don't have any interest in knowing anything, you really can plug and play those.
Mm.
It's really quite something. But then as we know, as you start to get more picky about your sound and as you start to learn the basics, you do want the ability to adjust those reeds for optimal stability, right?
Yeah.
And optimal efficiency. So that's where the adjustments come in. And once you understand those adjustments, it's the same basic adjustments you would make to Kane drone reeds to get them to work as well.
Mm.
So the basics, we won't get into it today, but the basics are actually pretty similar. The biggest thing, I think we talked about it in last week's episode, the biggest thing with the Kane drone reeds is it's a lot like the Chanter reed, where we need to give it time to soak in the sort of equilibrium level of moisture. We need to let things stabilize before we can expect the Kane drone reeds to become super solid and super reliable.
Do you feel like that process of playing in is maybe more pleasant when you're, because of course you're going to have a Kane Chanter reed. Does it play in right along with the Kane drone reeds? Whereas if you had synthetic drone reeds and a Kane Chanter reed, it's really unpleasant for a few minutes until your Chanter plays in. Like maybe, is everything warming up together?
No, I don't think it's anything quite that organized. And I don't find warming up with synthetic reeds and the Chanter all that bad. It's pretty good. I do think, though, that sometimes you get your Kane Chanter reeds sounding amazing at pretty close to the point where your drone reeds are already forming condensation on them. So because of the two wildly different materials, you end up with a pretty short playing window of stability, right? So the Kane can be really handy in that way, in the sense that, the bagpipe is stabilized at a very similar point in time, and then it will remain stable for quite a while. I mean, let's face it, that's one of two main reasons why all of the top grade one bands are playing Kane drone reeds. And I actually don't know if that's true at this point, but I certainly know that many of the top bands are playing Kane drone reeds because you get a better tone. That's reason number one. And reason number two is once you're rolling, once things are settled in and you have experts all with well set up Kane, it's more predictable and stable and they're going to stay. And you can put your pipes down for 4 minutes and fire them up again and they're still in. If you put your synthetic drone reed bagpipes down for 4 minutes, if they have a little condensation rolling around in there, you pick them up again, they're not going to be in tune anymore. It's a big problem.
I don't know if you're in the pocket of the United Spain Reed Cutters Union or what, but you're making a pretty good case for trying Kane drone reeds. You're making me want to try it, Andrew.
Yeah, well, I recently saw a YouTube video with a lot of views on it that triggered me a little bit. In the sense, it was just like, the conclusion was, hey, guys, it's 2024. Don't use Kane reeds. That's just dumb. And that's not it at all. That's not it at all. Kane drone reeds are, and by the way, I was not force kicking and screaming, but when I joined Inverary, it was like, hey, we're playing Kane drone reeds, bro. and you're going to get them sounding good. That's part of the deal. And I was like, cool. Well, I want to play an Inveray, so I guess we better dig in. But it's so rewarding to dig into this. And you learn things about drone reads that you would never learn otherwise. Mm. For example, cane drone reads are more stable and more reliable than synthetic drone reads. I'm just going to let that, let's just have a moment of silence and let that float out there. Right? And that's something that I did not expect until
I'm not expecting it either. You telling me this is changing the way I think. Now, right
now, there's an asterisk there and there's details, right? Like, we got to get the cane drone reads set up properly. We have to play on a regular enough basis that we can learn what our instrument's going to do and how it's going to work. But then, yeah, they sound better and they're more stable. Mm. That sounds good. I mean, and what you'll find is there's aspects of cane drone reads that are obviously much more difficult. And for a pure beginner, we've talked about this a million times, right? For a pure beginner, we don't want cane drone reads. That's going to add a lot of complexity to something that's already really complex. Cool. Synthetic drone reads are amazing. By the way, also, if you're a professional P-Rock player who's trying to win the Glenfiddich, you're probably not going to play cane, because as stable and as reliable as it is, they still are going to drift ever so slightly on you, because they're made of an organic material and they're not perfectly predictable carbon fiber or whatever, right? So they're still going to drift on you. So you're probably not going to use it in certain situations. But man, in most situations, if you can get them going well, it's amazing and rewarding. And you really like playing your pipes. And so anyway, my point of all that is just to say, yeah, cane drone reads should not be a write-off. And it should be something that an intermediate or an advanced piper is curious about, the very least. Mm-hmm. If for no other reason, then you're going to learn about how the bagpipe works a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, it occurs to me now that the idea of getting my entire band set up with exactly matching reeds maybe is a bit silly if I'm not also getting them set up with exactly matching drones, right? And so it's...
Well,
so
and is that what you want, right? So it's...
That's not what I want, yeah.
Imagine if, like, the human race had all exactly the same DNA. Right? We kind of know that wouldn't be great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
right.
All you have to do is take biology and you're like, oh, I see. So it's like, we're all actually different. And that's, it would actually be a nightmare if that wasn't the case. I mean, you'd be extremely vulnerable to rapid extinction, right? So we have all that diversity, and that diversity is a good thing. So I think that's probably true with your band's drone sound as well. Mm. I would be not concerned at all that we all sound the same. I would be more concerned with the fact that we're all producing a really pleasing sound, okay, and which could be different from set of drones to sets of drones, right? That we're all producing extremely pleasing sound, and that it's extremely stable sound, and that it's a predictable sound in the sense that when we're 35 minutes in, people haven't gone wildly out, that they're still pretty zoned into tune. Those are the characteristics: that I like the sound, that it's stable, and that it's predictable. Those are the things that we're looking for. And that they're all the same, that's not even on my list. I'm not even worried about it. And by the way, I'm just going to go wild and crazy here and say that I think matching Channers is overrated too.
Mm. You are getting wild and crazy.
Yeah, who cares? Who cares? What do we care about with the Chanter? Well, we care about that the sound is, that we like the sound of each individual bagpipe, that it's sounding good. And we care that it's stable. And if Chanter design... different chanter designs resulted in wildly divergent rates of pitch change or something, obviously that would be bad, but I don't think chanters really typically do.
Andrew, that could be a really freeing kind of message for a lot of us who are playing with, like, small local bands where we're always strapped for cash. I think it's a pretty common thing for us to feel like, if we could only afford it, we'd get all matching chanters, or we really do a lot of work in order to get to the point where we can buy a bunch of matching chanters. And that's not to say that's a bad thing, but if it's not necessary, then that kind of frees up mental space to go, no, let's just focus on playing. We're going to sound good, even if we don't have matching chanters.
I mean, there's definitely some utility to matching chanters in the sense that there's consistency, and so you can rule out potential variables, but no, I don't think you need them. I don't think you should mix black wood and plastic. It should be the same general material that you use. Mm. But fun fact, pretty darn sure Vic Police won the Worlds in 1998 with mismatched chanters.
Interesting. I would never have guessed that.
Yeah. And by the way, they're famous for having one of the best sounds ever heard ever at the Worlds. I'm not sure if people still commonly agree on that or not, but it was certainly an incredible sound. Certainly groundbreaking for the time. So I'm pretty sure that's true. And then I'm pretty sure that the current world champions don't use entirely matching chanters either. I could be wrong about that. Apologies to anyone if I'm misspeaking there. But yeah, I think matching chanters also overrated. What do we care about? We care it sounds great, that it's stable, that it's predictable. Just go with that. The rest is, yeah, how much does a set of matching chanters cost? Let's say 20 times 200 bucks. Let's call it $4,000 by the time you're done.
Yeah.
How about you invest $4,000 into teaching the individuals in your band to tune their pipes better and to learn about tuning? It'd be a way better investment, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, how many like guest instructor visits could you fund with that same amount of money?
Yeah. Or how many dojo tuning algorithm courses?
Even better.
Or something like that, or whatever. Yeah, exactly. Learn how to tune. That's the real secret, by the way. Just talking about achieving a great sound with the band, right? The real secret is that if every individual in the band has great knowledge and experience producing their own great sound on their instrument, then with not that much struggle, the band is going to sound great. I mean, don't get me wrong, Richard Parks is a mastermind, but do you think it helps that everyone else standing around him is also more or less a bagpipe sound mastermind?
Yeah, surely.
Yeah. I think it helps, bro. I think it helps. It's like in the NFL. Do you think it's helpful that every single person, including like the entire second team that they have sitting on the bench the entire game, do you think it helps that they're all world-class athletes? Yeah, it probably helps their football skills, right?
You keep making really good points that I keep feeling like, well, I don't want to mess that up. That's a great point. But I am curious. You mentioned that your Kinnaird and Easy Drone mix. Do you feel like it's more typical to mix types or brands than to just have a full set of from the same maker in a set of pipes?
I don't know how typical things are, but I do know it's quite common. Most of my bagpiping peers have a mixture, but not all by any means. But yeah, a lot of times you'll see people with a set of matching tenors and then a different kind of bass drone where they feel like it particularly makes the sound good. But it's all trial and error and it's all up to you. And I would not get religious about it. Oh, Andrew plays two easies in a Kinnaird. That's what I want to try and do. I mean, go for it by all means, check it out. But you might find for you, it's not noticeably different at all. And that could be influenced by any number of variables. Maybe I just have bad blowing.
Yeah. Keep working at it, Andrew. You'll get there.
Yeah.
Do you know what's going on with the inverted bass drones? Is that...
Oh, yeah. We were going to talk about the inverted bass drones. Yeah. What's up with that?
I've always wondered. I feel like I didn't used to see them. I feel like it... And so maybe I was ignorant, but I feel like this is a more recent thing that started to happen, that you see more and more of these inverted bass drones. But why? I don't know. I'm not saying it's dumb. I'm just saying I don't understand.
Well, the answer to that question is something along... It must have something to do with quality of sound, stability of sound, predictability of sound. And then for me, there's a fourth one there, which is, does it start? So I was having trouble with my starts last year. And Rory Grossart, one of the great kings of Kane. I like that. That's going to be like a new FX miniseries. But Rory, one of the great kings of Kane, was like, here, stick this in. And it was an inverted bass. And it started every time for me, no problem. And it sounded to me more or less the same as normal design, but it started better. So I went with it. And I wonder if that's the primary reason that people like the inverted, but I don't know. I really don't know. And honestly, my interest level is fairly low. What I'm really looking for in any drone read, whether it's inverted or not, is the factors that we've established today. But then it has to start. That's one of the things
that is
about
important.
Playing in a pipe band. Yeah. you don't want the bass drone to double tone on you.
Well, maybe that's another good one for if anybody has any ideas about the Y2 and the what for with the inverted bass, drop some comments.
Yeah. I really think that here, let's wrap up this episode with the following deep thought with Andy. You remember Deep Thoughts with Andy?
Yeah, I'm ready.
On Saturday Night Live, was it?
That's right, yeah.
I think it was. Deep Thoughts.
Or was it? No, Jack Handy.
Jack
predecessor was Jack Handy. Yeah, it was Jack Handy.
Jack Handy. Yeah.
But I have a collection of those as a book on my bookshelf inside.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
They were pretty funny. It was like in the Tim Meadows era, right? Was Tim Meadows the voice or not? I don't remember.
I always assumed it was Jack Handy. I don't know.
But anyway, deep thought. This in a instrument as complex as the bagpipe, right? There's so many complex variables going on, right? The specifics are really overrated. Okay. So that's my deep thought. So in the bagpipe, what drone read you pick, right? Or a drone read that sounds bad, it could be sounding bad for reasons that have nothing to do with the drone read. As a matter of fact, in the era of synthetic drone reads, I would say that's probably true 4 out of every 5 times. It's like, oh, something about that drone read sounds really yucky. Well, it's probably not the drone read. It could be the calibration of the drone read. It could be the fact that your bagpipe's leaking air. It could be the fact that when you turn to your drone top to try and get the drone in tune, it actually came out of the stock 2/3 of the way, and it's actually now wildly leaking air, and that's why it sounds bad. Bad blowing, or just generally inability to bring the drones into tune with each other, right? There's a million reasons. Or the weather's not good today, or the reed is soaked with condensation, right? So none of those things I listed have anything to do with the drone reed itself, right? So the bagpipe is a complex instrument. We've got to get all that stuff sorted out. So usually what drone reeds you play is going to be a fairly minor issue. People are like, what channel reed do you play? And the first thing in my mind that I think is, it's not that relevant a question. And then I follow up with telling them what I play, but it's not that relevant. What's relevant is that we somehow deal with all the complexity of the instrument to be able to organize all these things. So with the drone read, I'm looking for something simple that's going to do what I need it to do. Right? That's why Easy Drone is a great option. There's a reason it's been by far the most popular read for 25 years. And it's not necessarily because it's the best sounding read. I don't know what the best sounding read is, right? I'm too busy with the other stuff that's way more important, right? And then what you find is the Easy Drones free up bandwidth for you because they're simple and they typically just work well. And those are the important qualities. And they sound good. So they sound good, they're stable, and they're predictable, right? And then that's what you're looking for. And then once you have that, sure, you can trial and error and you can experiment and stuff, but it's very difficult to get the complex bagpipe machine working correctly and to become in control of it. So don't sweat the small stuff. And when things are going badly, it's not usually because of your drone reads.
Hey, everybody. Andrew Douglas here from the Piper's Dojo, and I just want to say thanks so much for listening to today's iteration of the podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard here today, it would be super helpful to us and to a lot of bagpipers out there trying to find us if you could give us a top-notch review on whatever platform you're using to listen to this podcast, particularly Apple, iTunes, and Spotify and things like that. Your review would be really, really helpful. So if you have a moment today, definitely go over there and help us out. Other than that, until we meet again on the podcast or somewhere else, thanks again for listening.